Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Table Rounds with Dr. and Dr. Stenerson. I'm your host, Dr. Bendix Stenerson.
And I'm your co-host, Dr. Rebecca Stenerson.
Today's episode, number 4, Bridging the Gap. Some objectives for today. First, to discuss gap year statistics based on the 2023 AMC Matriculating Student Survey. This is for all first-year medical students. Number 2, highlighting activities to consider during a gap year or years. These can be educational, research, clinical, general life experiences. Third, we want to talk about why is this important. When the time comes to interview for medical school and residency, you want to have skills. You want to have something to talk about. You want to have something to connect with your interviewer. And these experiences should highlight who you are and your strengths moving forward in your career. And last, to discuss what we would do differently and the advantages and disadvantages we recognize from our own experiences.
So to start off, we put some information out on our Instagram over the last week about the gap year statistics from the AAMC Matriculating Student Survey from last year. And over the last few years, we've seen that more and more students are taking gap years. And last year, less than 27% took less than 1 year in between their undergraduate education and going straight into medical school.
So when you're saying less than 1 year, do you mean that people are going directly from undergrad to med school?
Yes. So that would generally encompass students who went straight from undergrad to med school. And then to further break down that other percentage, 48% were taking between 1 and 2 years in between, 17% were taking anywhere from 3 to 4 years, and 8% were taking 5 or more years.
Just hearing these statistics kind of makes me feel good. I mean, I thought I was an absolute failure for not getting into medical school right away. Obviously, took a just regular gap year and then did a master's for 2 years, but it seems like this is becoming the norm. The days of going from undergrad with perfect grades, perfect MCAT scores, and then right into medical school seems like it's not really happening. And I'm not sure if that's based on how competitive it is or if that's just based on applicants' preferences, if they want to take that time off to kind of get ready, do things that they've been waiting to in that time from undergrad. It's really like your last chance to do anything before you become super busy and locked down, ultimately committed to medicine.
I think that's a good point, and we can offer some insight over the rest of this episode in comparing our experiences. I didn't take any gap years, and Bendix took 3 in total, and we'll be able to talk about some of the advantages, disadvantages of both of those paths, but it's interesting to look at the numbers because, yes, about 50% of students who went in last year took a year or two, and the question is, what did they do with this time? What are students doing to strengthen their applications and gain experience outside of their undergraduate education? What can you do? So we'll get into highlighting some of the things that you can consider. And most of this information is based on what we've seen from our peers, our co-residents, students that we mentor, just different things that we've come across in our own training and advice and insight that we've gotten from friends of ours. And hopefully we can put that together to give you some ideas if you're in the position now of considering a gap year or starting a gap year, of some things that maybe will inspire you or give you some ideas of what you want to accomplish over this time while you're on this journey.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I was crushed when I didn't get in, and I didn't know these statistics. I didn't know that how common it was. I mean, looking at a lot of my friends in medical school, a lot of them did take gap years, but going from undergrad in a competitive university like we are, where everyone around us is pre-health, whether it be medical, dental, PA, nursing, things like that, I just didn't know these statistics. So I thought I really had fallen behind, but hearing these numbers kind of reassures you. Another thing to say about that, these experiences that you're getting in between undergrad and medical school, these aren't just things you're going to talk about for that application cycle. These are things you're going to talk about for residency, for fellowship, getting a job. You want to be different than like everyone. I mean, it's so easy to just to be like, well, I was pre-med, bio, or chemistry major in undergrad. Hey, can I get into your school? And it's not that easy, unfortunately. And ultimately, I think there's a lot of, I took a lot of benefit. I value my years. I'm not looking back. I'm not upset that I took those kind of 3 years to ultimately get into medical school. I mean, 2 of the years were spent in my master's, which were very demanding times, but that 1 year before that, I mean, kind of let me learn how to be successful again with school and stuff. So ultimately, looking back, I think it was great, but hopefully some of this information that we share with you guys can help you make yourselves more competitive, feel better about the fact that maybe you're not getting into medical school the first try, and ultimately to like never give up, to because if you want to be in medicine, it's a tough grinding path, which I know we keep talking about over the podcast, but it's true. But these are kind of things that we see that could set you guys up for success.
And it will continuously come up. And even in this last interview cycle, when I was interviewing applicants, a lot of our conversation centered around things that they got involved in before going to med school and then maybe continued to do, especially projects that they had that were totally unrelated to medicine and led them to develop really useful skills. And so this isn't a set comprehensive list of things you can do. It's based on our own experiences, interactions, things that we've learned from our peers. So we're not going to go into so much detail about how to pursue these individual experiences, but more so give you some points to jump off from and things to think about to inspire your own journey. And maybe you'll identify with something that's interesting to you. So the first category that we're going to talk about is research positions. And from the AAMC survey last year, this was something that about 50% of first-year medical students referenced that they did during their gap years was pursuing research opportunities. So it's one of the more common things that you'll see or consider doing during this time in between. And what exactly that could look like. Some labs offer full-time research positions for students who have graduated from undergrad already that you can do 9 to 5, work on funded research projects, facilitate some of these projects that are run by university-based labs. If you're not looking for something full-time, other labs will offer part-time research positions if there's a specific project that you're interested in. And I had some research experience when I was a medical student, but there were postgraduate students who were working in the lab at the same time, helping with research projects. I worked on a few different things that were focused on neurocognitive disorders in patients with HIV. And a lot of these projects are long-running funded projects. So your role may be to do data entry. You may be facilitating interviews with participants in the study. It really depends on what kind of research it is. If it's something more benchwork-based, you know, there's a lot of variability when you're talking about research. If you're in a biochemistry lab or a pathology lab, or you're doing something more clinical and you're working with participants who are in a drug study.
Yeah, one of the programs I interviewed at for residency, the program director had a kind of semi-official position where someone would come on for a year or 6 months, and they would work with him in his office, kind of facilitating, writing up papers, interesting patient encounters. And these are things, you know, for us as residents, they're kind of bread and butter, super easy, efficient things for us to do that we look for. But also having someone that's able to sit down, write them, kind of review some literature and put it all together. These positions are out there. I know even just reaching out to doctors in your area, they might have these kind of positions available. I think one of the local hospitals to where I grew up, there was a doctor there that had positions just like Rebecca was mentioning, just kind of data entry, tagging along the doctor, recording data points that they're looking for. And I think this was an orthopedic office, so probably pain related and how often they're taking the medications and how quickly they're back to activity and things like that. So there's lots of opportunity with something that might not seem so serious, but it'll be something long-term, very beneficial for you to talk to and that you can get exposed to early on.
And a lot of these positions may not be explicitly advertised when you're on the job search. So it's worth reaching out to labs if there's an ongoing project that you're interested in. Some universities will have these positions listed on their websites. But in general, if this is something that you want to do, whether it's full-time or part-time, I would reach out to local labs who are working on projects that you're interested in, physicians doing clinical trials potentially, and see if there's any availability. And that brings us into our next topic, our next category of experiences that you can consider during this time, and that would be clinical experience, which is something that a lot of pre-med students want to have on their application, and I think is increasingly more important when you're applying to school, is having some sort of clinical experience beforehand. And it's beyond probably what we thought many years ago was sufficient in just shadowing. I think now students are more actively getting hands-on clinical experience, and schools are looking for that as well.
Yeah, I think clinical experience is probably the biggest, maybe most important thing. How do you know you want to do something if you haven't done it, right? Especially with things like scribing. That's oftentimes a lot of these larger companies that hire scribes, they work out of emergency departments. So it's kind of that fast-paced, keeping up with everything. Or in a private practice that's, you know, the doctors just want to have greater efficiency. So they hire scribes to kind of work alongside them and just basically just taking notes. But I've heard of it in the capacity that sometimes the scribe goes in before. That's how I worked. I would go in, talk to the patient in advance, get all the pertinent information, and then the doctors would come in and they would do like all the physical exam. They'd kind of brush up on some of the important highlights that I had mentioned. Then obviously for surgical patients, they had certain questions that they would really target. But ultimately, there's a pretty wide range of hands-on ability. For myself, I would say it was pretty unique because I got to spend 10, 15 minutes. I mean, it was a very busy clinic, so they were always on top of us to be quick, but I got to take my time, really get a full, not a history and physical, but the history part. And so when I started medical school, I would say that I was pretty ahead with my physical diagnosis class because I was already used to kind of the SOAP process, subjective, objective, assessment, plan. You know, I kind of was able to practice on my own before even starting medical school on that subjective portion. I remember one of the biggest parts of medicine, obviously, is interacting with patients. So having had that exposure kind of made me aware that I was capable of, felt, made me feel more confident when I took my classes because I'd already done it. With medical school, you learn the physical exam part, being more hands-on, physically touching the patient to kind of assess them, listen to the heart, lungs, things like that. But a big part of it is just knowing that you're able to communicate and start that initial encounter with a patient.
Yeah, that interaction is super helpful. And just being able to talk to different kinds of people. And I think just being in a clinical setting kind of gives you some insight into what you want to do down the line. If maybe you don't know if you're comfortable with blood or not, or if you like the fast-paced environment of an ED, or if it's overwhelming, or if seeing traumas as an EMT is something that you feel like you can manage. I don't think you really know that until you're in that kind of situation.
And not only manage, but like what drives you to get on, to get through medical school, right? Like knowing that you've done something that you love, that you can see yourself doing for the rest of your life, that kind of motivates you to get through these classes when you're sitting down, bogged down with all these hours of class. So also some of these clinical experiences, a lot of times people are taking several years off with the intention that they want to do some of these clinical experience jobs, medical assistants, EMT, firefighters, things like that. I've seen a lot of people that'll do these jobs for 4 or 5 years. I have some co-residents that have done that and made them really strong clinicians, to say it so. So it's not to say, you know, we kind of already talked about statistics of what percentage of people are kind of sticking around, taking an extra year or two, but sometimes it's okay to go in with a set plan. You can even save money to buy a house to then pay for where you're going to live in med school. So don't look at all these, like these years off as like a negative. Like this can truly set you up for the future, because if you can go into medical school with some money saved up to pay for rent, food, not have to take out all those loans, just that alone kind of sets you apart from your classmates.
And some of the other things, like Appendic had mentioned earlier, MA, EMT, firefighter, scribing, there's some other clinical positions that maybe we don't commonly think about. I knew some people who were pharmacy technicians who worked in patient transport in the hospital, who did ED intake services. Behavioral health technician often goes overlooked, but you can do that full time, or working inpatient as a phlebotomist, either in the hospital or in an outpatient clinic.
A lot of these things kind of go back to like what we talked about in our last podcast, like, are you a thinker or are you a doer? And right, like here we're talking about things like you're already starting to see, like, what do you see yourself as? Like, do you see yourself as a thinker or do you see yourself as a doer in the medical realm?
Sure, now is a good time to try both of those things. Try something that's hands-on clinical and add in some research, especially if you can do it at the same institution. If you're really unsure going in and you want to get some more insight into yourself, that's one thing to think about. In addition to some of those clinical roles, I've known some people who have gone through AmeriCorps, and this is basically a national service volunteer program.
One of the people I went through my master's and into med school with, he traveled, he would respond to like wildfires, and he was knew that he saw on the news there's a wildfire in this part of the country. He knew that he could potentially be getting a call and he would respond to those, spend about a week or two there kind of helping fight those fires. These are, you know, experiences, you know, that's not something that everyone gets to do, which is pretty awesome. And also one of my co-residents worked more so as a firefighter, but I think he traveled also, same thing, worked at national parks and would help control these kind of natural disasters. Another thing, kind of going back to taking the time as kind of starting a different career in that gap, however long it be, is pharmaceutical reps, medical device sales. I know that was one of the things, you know, with a biology degree, I'd spent a lot of time working with orthopedics. I really was considering like medical device sales, like being the guy in the OR that's working alongside the doctor to help kind of fit prosthetics and implantables for like total knees, shoulders, things like that. So that's certainly an option, but I would assume that you're probably thinking a little more long-term with that, not just like a quick year. Other things is the opportunity to work in the hospital in the capacity of kind of getting used to that environment as case managers. Those are people that is now as residents, doctors working in a hospital. And I think even in the outpatient setting as well are vital to kind of the success of patients upon discharge and meeting their needs and making sure that they're in the right environment to get healthy.
Yeah, case managers, huge part of psychiatry. Hello, our case managers. And they really play a significant role in patient care with psych especially. But I interviewed with somebody who had done that for 2 years in between as well. So he got a lot of good experience out of that.
You can only imagine how much easier your life becomes than when you're a resident because you know the types of resources that are out there.
And then just outside of that too, clinical experience that is less of a job commitment, but things that you can look for, volunteering opportunities in local nursing homes, hospice facilities. That's something that is generally available in a lot of different areas.
And there's volunteer roles even just in the hospitals as well. So really just however you want to gain access, there's a possibility. You're just going to have to seek it and decide which one's best for you.
And moving on to our next category, educational things, different educational opportunities that you can consider during this time. Maybe even things that, like you had mentioned, you want to plan to do before going to medical school anyway. The first one we'll talk about are post-bac programs or bridge programs specifically for medical education. There are a number of different master's programs that are targeted towards preparing you for medical school all over the country.
Yeah, I think a lot of these, it's not to say that they're a guarantee bridge. Some of them offer a guarantee interview, which, you know, getting an interview to med school is not the easiest. So having that can certainly set you up. And if you've taken 2 or 3 years off and you did 1 year of one of these other activities and then you did a post-bac at a program at a medical school that's associated with the medical school, well, then you have something to talk about. You have two things to talk about. You can talk about your experiences in that first year and then your experiences and what you've learned and how you've improved as a student and how you're better prepared to be a medical student in that demanding setting. Other things, obviously, master's programs, these can range from more so biomedical sciences, kind of like I did, or nutrition, physiology, public health, an MBA, health policy, healthcare administration. These are obviously things that can help you more or less with your long-term goals. You know, if you want to go into, after working as an attending for 5 to 10 years, having the possibility of working directly for the hospital as an administrator, becoming CMO, things like that. These are obviously ways to kind of set yourself up for that early on.
Definitely doing something like healthcare administration and MBA before will give you some insight onto the business side of medicine. And these programs vary in length. Some of the post-bac programs are only a year long. some of these master's programs may be 18 months, 2 years, depending on what your credits are and what kind of program you plan to pursue.
And then simply, one of the things that I was recommended to do by an admissions administrator was to go back and take classes at my local state college. So in my first year where I was working as a scribe, I was also in school. I took, you know, 6 credits, so 2 classes, but just to kind of boost my GPA, make enough for, I guess you can say, some of the poor grades that I had early on, but it ultimately got me into my master's, which then, luckily for me, was a bridge program at that time into medical school. So with these educational types of goals and working on, I really did a little bit of everything. You know, just going back to undergrad, I did really well most of undergrad until my third year. Had one class I didn't do so well in, retook the class in undergrad, crushed it, became the TA for it. So obviously that showed improvement. Then I graduated. I was in my gap year, spoke with an administrator, was told, hey, take some classes at the state college. Then I also started a master's at FAU, like the state college where I was. So I not only started taking classes, I started a master's that ultimately bridged me into my other master's, because I did well in those classes, showed improvement. The dean felt comfortable that I had improved, was the right fit for the program, did the master's, got into med school. So there is no perfect formula, but there are opportunities to boost your grades if that's something you need to do. And one bad grade, 2 bad grades, whatever it be, you can always fix those.
And if you look at this too as an opportunity, if you maybe decided later on in undergrad that you wanted to go to medical school, so now you're planning to take the prereqs at another time, or you felt like you needed to boost your GPA or your grades, and now you're focused that this is going to be your goal, it's an opportunity to demonstrate your learning ability and really boost your application and set yourself up to do well.
Yeah, that's hard too. Obviously, there's a lot of people out there that worked in business or finance and realize it's not for them. And they maybe once upon a time thought they wanted to become a doctor, and then they need to get those prereqs in. They could do a post-bac or something like that just to kind of fulfill those requirements and then reapply. So lots of opportunities.
So those are some things for you to think about. And so for our last category of things that we're going to talk about to fill during your gap years will be other skills, other life experiences, things that you may not think would be relevant but can play a role in the rest of your training. And one of the first things I always like to think about is really just working in any other capacity outside of medicine, especially in something like hospitality or the service industry. Some of the best people that I've worked with and I'm friends with have worked in restaurants as barbacks, bartenders, had other experience before going to medical school, or had good experience working with other people, customer service, getting comfortable in fast-paced environments.
And most importantly, demanding environments. Like, there's nothing more demanding than being a server, because someone wants their food, they want it hot, they want it now. Understanding that pressure and not becoming frustrated and is really valuable to have.
Yeah, and when it's a busy night and you're trying to balance a lot of people, prioritize, coordinate, communicate, all of those are really valuable skills. Even working unusual hours, working late, all of that kind of plays into skills that you build. But especially just the communication, dealing with managing situations and, you know, delivering.
It all kind of plays into the fact that you got to be at your A game at all times. And the sooner you can learn that and understand that there's going to be hiccups along the way and things are going to be hard and frustrating, the better you're going to be long term.
And I think at some point, everyone should just have some kind of job outside of school, whether it's in the service industry or working in retail or, you know, in a school, tutoring as a teacher, something that you can do that gives you some additional experience with communicating with other people, because it's not something that's strongly emphasized in college, especially if you're a science major. So you got to go outside of that and find ways to get comfortable with that. Some other things to think about: learning another language, whether you're volunteering with an organization that's going to send you on some kind of mission trip, maybe going somewhere to learn something new.
Or just sitting home and doing Rosetta Stone. I mean, something you can talk about. You can have that conversation. I mean, obviously, there's some languages that might not be as useful, but for us, you know, I know Rebecca talks about it all the time. She wished she would have learned Spanish earlier on, but here we are. You learn on the job and you pick up as much as you can. But if you have that time off, why not learn a language? And that's something you can supplement with all these other things we've talked about, you know? And that's what we're trying to emphasize, is there's not one formula. A lot of these things you can do simultaneously. And we kind of mentioned it earlier, you want to have that year off to kind of maybe relax and kind of decompress before all the stress of the rest of your life, but make the most of the time.
Or something non-traditional too, like American Sign Language. I would have loved to learn that. I think we had some classes in college that were offering that, but that would have been a really great skill to have. Depending on what you go into in medicine, it could have been really useful.
And all it takes is one patient for you to, that no one else can communicate with, that no one else can connect with. And if you can have a way of finding that connection, that truly will be an impactful experience for yourself, but the patient. And I know it's hard to say, like, well, if it's not going to be useful for everyone, why should I do it? And it's like, sometimes it's just for that one patient. And I haven't come across my Norwegian patient yet, but I'm sure the day it comes, they're probably going to be happy that I'm on the other side of the bed, hopefully.
I think so. Some other things you can think about too, writing skills in any capacity, whether you had a strong writing background from school or want to do that in your time in between. Writing skills are always going to be useful in medicine, especially if you want to go into research, start writing things for journal publications, medical related media. That's also something to think about.
Other things, traveling the world, you know, traveling the US, whatever it be, going into medicine, health and wellness is a very important thing. Becoming a yoga instructor, if that's something that you really enjoy or passionate about, becoming a personal trainer, you can become a certified personal trainer on an online course. And I don't think that takes more than 3 to 6 months, maybe, depending on how quickly you want to do it. And if that's all you're doing, you could probably get through that pretty quickly. And these are all things that set you up long-term for success.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if you want to go into sports medicine in some capacity, having that kind of background could be helpful. And I knew some people too who had become instructors before going to medical school, yoga, Pilates, and then were able to teach on the side while they were in school to make a little bit of extra money. So that's also something that's helpful to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, and sometimes, like we talk about the traveling, one of my classmates in med school, her husband, started a travel blog, a travel Instagram, photography Instagram, ended up selling it to National Geographic, I think, something crazy. And, you know, these are financial things that could potentially set you up. So depends on, you know, if you dive fully into something, you can set yourself up really well for the short term financially with a job that will pay for like your rent, like I talked about, or, you know, long term, maybe more than that, you know, so it's pretty awesome.
Or a side business that you wanted to start, a creative project, a side hustle. Maybe you have an invention you want to take to Shark Tank. Anything that you can do to kind of set yourself up. Maybe you want to learn about real estate, get a real estate license in that time in between. All of that are still things that are going to help you along on your journey. Things you can talk about, skills you can obtain from doing those different kind of things. All of it's going to be things that you'll come back to when you're applying for school and for residency, even in creating a picture of who you are. And later on, we'll get into some episodes that go into more detail about creating a personal statement that's reflective of you and in a really comprehensive application. So some things to think about. And we'll talk about that more over the summer too. And then just considering in our own journeys, what would we do differently?
You know, kind of looking back, what would I have done differently? It's a good question. I mean, obviously my path, but looking back, I think it really benefited me. So I don't really feel like I should have done something that much differently. One of the things I really did consider for a good 3-4 months at the beginning of my year off was going into, like I mentioned earlier, like some kind of medical device sales. Would that have set me up for coming back into medicine? Would I have really wanted to, you know, take the time to go to school after having been out working for a long time? I'm not sure, but that is something that I think would have been really interesting. And, you know, talking about the financial, setting us up financially, that would have been really cool.
I do think looking back, if I were to do this differently and had some time in between, I would have done something different to set myself up better financially, whether that was working, saving money for school, planning ahead for some of those expenses that you have as a medical student with your exams and rent, even going to different locations for rotations, audition rotations. A lot of the expenses of medical school outside of the tuition, I wasn't really aware of and didn't really plan for. So you end up kind of backtracking to get it resolved, and it does work out and it is feasible. But I think if I would have spent that time learning a little bit more about how to run a business, how to start an LLC, file your taxes, all of the things that set you up, Roth IRAs, 401ks, all of that. And I've learned that along the way. But I think if I would have focused on that a little bit more, it would have been a really good use of that time.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously looking back, could you have done something differently? Sure. But at the same time, like a year, 2 years, 3 years closer to being done. So it's not to say that going right into medical school is a terrible thing. Obviously, you know, it works out for us because, you know, you'll hopefully be done a couple of years before me.
And that brings us really into our last point. What are the, just some of the advantages, disadvantages? And like we've mentioned during most of this episode, there's a lot of benefits to having this time, developing more skills, having the opportunity to interact with different kinds of people, broaden your perspective, learn new things, become a better communicator. And especially now, I think for students who are in college and graduating even now in 2024, who maybe started their freshman year during COVID time and didn't have as much of an opportunity to engage with other people on campus or learn from mentors and get that clinical experience, then now may be an opportunity for you to do that and plan to do that in between. Even if it feels that it's not the predicted linear journey that you thought you were going to have, it doesn't mean that it's not going to work out or that you're not going to end up in the position that you really want to be in, because there's not any really specific way to do this anymore. And the numbers are showing us that most students are taking a non-traditional route. So if you don't end up doing things in a path that you predicted, look at ways to maximize this opportunity. With that said, you do still have to consider and plan ahead for taking time. So some of the caveats to consider of this time is planning for, you know, your own financial stability, family support, determining how you're going to make an income in that time in between if you're doing something like a non-funded research position, and having less of that structure in your day that you maybe had while you were a college student going to class over those 4 years. So you have to create a lot of your own structure and build a day-to-day schedule that is keeping you on track for your goals, but also giving you creative opportunity and flexibility to get some non-traditional experiences.
Yeah, and I think like you mentioned, like not having as much structure to your day necessarily in a gap year or something like that, especially being an undergrad, you know, you have your set scheduled classes, you have your exams on these days, you have your class at this time, from this time to this time, you know you're going to study afterwards. People that I see that are successful in medicine, they're motivated, they have really strong time management, and they're disciplined. You know, time management's huge in medicine because day to day, you have to wake up on time, you got to be at the hospital on time, you got to in between there find time to eat your breakfast, take a shower, then you got to get to work, you got to round on your patients in a set time, and you got to know that some days you might have 5 patients, some days you might have 10 patients, but you still have that same set time to get everything done. So being motivated and having good time management skills and discipline, really, if you can get those skills down early, just make you successful in the end. And at the end of the day, we're always learning as medical students, as residents, one day as a practicing attending physician. Our job is to continue learning. And the day you stop learning or wanting to learn, unfortunately, becomes the end, and you get left behind with the practices of medicine because medicine's constantly changing. So you just have to be motivated. Know that everything you're doing kind of early on is just another skill that you're acquiring for later on.
And just to wrap all of this up, we hope that we've given you some ideas if you're in the position now where you're either in your gap year or you're finishing school, or maybe you're even changing career paths totally and thinking about things that you can do to add some experiences to your resume that could be applicable in medicine. Or maybe you're doing something now that you didn't even think could help you in this career. And no path is linear. There isn't one right way to do this. There's going to be benefits and disadvantages no matter what way you go about it. But knowing what kind of challenges may lie down the road can help you make some decisions that will get you to where you want to be.
And just knowing that, like, everyone's path's different. Your path is your own. Funny enough, I saw a quote today online on one of these pages I follow, and someone had mentioned something and that they were comparing theirs to something else, someone else's. And someone responded, comparing yourself to others is the death of happiness. So just knowing that it's yours, it's your own, embrace it. You might feel that one thing is less than someone else's, but I promise you, you probably have 10 things that are more than someone else. So just embrace it. Know that it's for the betterment of yourself. If it be 1 year, 2 years, it all works out.
And be creative with your time too. You know, if you want to do something different during that time, something that is unrelated to medicine, incorporating that into your journey, we'll all come together in the end.
Enjoy it, have fun, make the most of it, and know that if you want it one day, you can and will be a doctor. You're just going to have to work for it sometimes.
Yeah, it's really just the sum of a lot of small consistencies that get you there.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for joining us today. We'd like to remind our listeners that the content provided in this podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and represents our personal opinions. It does not reflect the views of our employers or any other organization we may be affiliated with. This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. The views expressed by the hosts and their guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Thank you for listening.